Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome back to Fourth Down Focus, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network. I am Dan Lundy, host of the podcast and founder of Fourth Down University, a company focused on the training and development of specialists and coaches. July is underway and it's a great month for sports. If you're into sports betting, BetOnline is where you can find it. From the NBA and NHL playoffs to baseball's marquee matchups, BetOnline has all the latest odds, news, and information for all your sports betting needs. Visit the website today at betonline.ag or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before the next tip-off, face-off, or pitch, check out BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Episode 40 of the podcast welcomes Alex Ward, long snapper for the University of Central Florida. Ward is entering his final season with UCF, where he started the last 23 games for the Knights. Ward is a native of Fort Walton Beach, where he attended Choctawhatchee High School. Alex excelled both on and off the gridiron, playing both tight end and long snapper while graduating summa cum laude. Ward is majoring in mechanical engineering, where he is currently balancing time between football class and an internship. Alex, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. It's honored to be here.
Yeah, man, it's a privilege. For those of you that don't know Alex, he's from the Panhandle. Choctawhatchee is one of my favorite high schools.
Words to say.
Yeah, words to say. It's not necessarily high school, but words to say. Like, I love it. I want to get right into it, man. Like, it's a kind of a hot topic, this recruiting I'm going to ask you about. We just went through it. Actually, we're in it now. Now it's all the 22s are the buzz and the 23s are getting flirted with. But I want you to talk a little bit about how you got to UCF, you know, how you essentially created an opportunity for yourself. You took control of your recruiting. So if you could talk about that and perhaps some positive and negative experiences you went through during this recruiting process.
Absolutely. My biggest thing was I didn't play football at all my junior year of high school. So going into my senior year of high school, I had zero looks. No coaches even knew I existed. I was playing tennis full time. So, I had my coach convince me to come back senior year, and I went full football, and I was going to play college sports. I knew that from when I was little. I thought it was going to be tennis. It wasn't. So when senior season came around, I was like, all right, I really got to show out. Didn't really happen. Messed up my finger partway through. And so I didn't have any looks at all. When I got to the recruiting part, we found out after my senior year that there are college long snappers only. And so I was way behind the curve. And when I learned that, I was pretty good at it. I snapped all through high school besides junior year, obviously. And we were like, all right, let's do this right. So we found a coach and then learned the correct form, correct technique, worked really hard on it, snapped for like, I did 100 punts and 100 field goals every day for like 6 months. So I got good enough to play in college, and that was the big step. And then I started calling schools. There was a guy ranked like fourth by Coles. Again, I didn't know Coles existed. So he was ranked like fourth in the country out of Tallahassee, which is right by me. He had a preferred walk-on from FSU, UCF, USF, and a couple other schools out of state. And me, I knew I wasn't going to get scholarship. So I was like, all right, wherever he commits, I'm going to start calling the other two. He committed to FSU. It's been their snapper. And so I was like, all right, UCF, USF it is. Let's go. So I got phone numbers for the two special teams coaches, started calling them off the hook. It was part of a dead period. I was an unrecruited athlete, so they couldn't call me back. And so they actually did me a favor by not calling me back, because it being that title of unrecruited athlete helps out in transfers and such. But so I got their number. I got their email. I would, film 10 straight punt snaps, 10 straight field goal snaps, my dad setting up a tripod and then catching them for me. And I'd send that to him like once a week and said, hey, coach, here I am. I'm Alex Ward. I'm going to call you Tuesday at 4:00. please pick up. And then, you know, it was constant. I just kept really bugging them. I mean, they don't get bugged. You can call them as much as you want. It's their job to find the next recruit. So, you know, I emailed them once a week, called them pretty much every day. Like said, hey, you know, they didn't pick up hardly ever. And I said, coach, I'm going to call you again tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Please pick up. So eventually the UCF coach picked up, Coach Javon DeWitt. He's now at UNC. And he said, you know, love the film you've been sending in. We think you'd be a good addition to our program. We'd love for you to come down and take a tour of the, like an unofficial visit. All right, sweet. Let's do it. And then USF, the guy picked up one time, asked me, are you enrolled in school already? I said, no, sir. I haven't applied because I haven't heard from you. And he said, have a great day. And that's how I got into UCF.
This is wild. So, I mean, there's a lot to cover here, but I want to start with tennis player. That's incredible, because on this show a lot, we talk about diversity and diversification, especially in the youth. To specialize too early, had you been a strict snapper seventh grade and on, you wouldn't be the athlete you are now. I think that tennis indirectly,
yeah,
right? Like tennis probably directly helps you with after the fact of snapping, what you're doing next. You're covering the middle of the field. You're trying to dissuade the most dangerous guy on the, usually a football team is a PR. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get him out of where he wants to be. And I think that you probably do a better job than most of that because you have good lateral movement, and that came from tennis. So I'm glad that you mentioned that you went outside the box. You know, you probably played that first, you know. So I really want to stress to the specialists listening, do not quit baseball, do not quit tennis, do not quit soccer. It's probably going to be the foundation of why you're going to be a great specialist one day.
Absolutely.
Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. When I see a good sized, strong, looks athletic long snapper, I ask, oh, what position do you play? And I already know they're a long snapper. And they say, oh, I'm the long snapper only. I'm only the long snapper. It just, I feel so bad every time. It's like you could be developing so much more right now than getting to college and having developed later. So, you know, even if you're a long snapper only right now, try to get on the field somewhere else. You know, punt return, if anything.
Amen. No, amen to that. And another thing I want to say is what I took away from what you said about your story is you were relentless. I hear a lot of negativity from both parents and the athletes in terms of, well, we initiated contact. We sent our film to X, Y, or Z. And I was like, yeah, but when was the last time? When did you do that? And was it only done once? And usually, mm-hmm. the answer is yeah. Like we never heard back. So we assumed. Well, that I hate that word assume, right? And I have a saying that I'm not going to say because it's not very professional, but it does make it usually makes for poor decisions. You can't assume something because we don't know if it's true. So if you want something bad enough and you did, you were, how do I say it, almost maniacal in your efforts to get this film in front of someone. Because if you're going to put that effort in, sell yourself. And the way you sell yourself is to always, always put it out there. And you never know who's going to take a bite. Eventually someone will, but if you only have one pole cast out in the water, you get one chance there. You got 10 poles cast in the water. The chances are that school of fish, someone's going to bite.
Absolutely. And also the emails and phone calls get buried under other people's emails and phone calls. You know, they're receiving film from everybody and their mother that wants to play at that school, you know, because they're not only like a special teams coordinator isn't only recruiting specialists. He also has a recruiting area that he does. So he's got all the athletes from, you know, I don't know, 5-6 area codes. And he's also got all these specialists hitting them up on top of it. If you want to be that one specialist that stands out, you know, you gotta be on top of that email list at least once, twice, three times, where it's good film and it's solid productivity.
And another thing you said that I think I should stress is you didn't send the same film over and over again. What you did instead was, because you worked every day, you had new film every day or 5 days a week or whatever it was. It was a lot. It was a high volume of film. And I bet someone probably initially saw one and then they saw another and they saw, well, this kid is not only sending me film every day, he's sending me new film every day. And he may have seen a drastic improvement. We don't know the evaluation side of things from these coaches. Everyone handles it differently, but I can assure you that you became warmer to them because of what you did, your practice, not only of being maniacal and emailing, but providing new content constantly to show you are in fact working daily. And I think that's probably what the catalyst was.
And honestly, the biggest point I need to stress is you need to get good enough to get the coach's attention. You can send them emails all day. You can bug them. But if they don't want you on the team because you're not good enough, they're not going to respond. So get it right. Get it to where they need you on the team.
That's a good lead in, because we're going to talk about you impressed me, and at fourth down, we are different. And I know everyone says, oh, our company's different, but we are a unique entity in the special teams world, because we stay away from the stars and the rankings and the subjectivity. And instead we treat every athlete as a personal problem. Right. And I think that you treat yourself as a personal problem. And I think that the analytical side of the way you approach your training is from what it is you are immersed in the classroom. You're a mechanical engineering major. And a few weeks ago we met, we discussed parallels between physics and football, specifically the kicking, punting, and snapping that you and I are involved in on a daily basis. I personally incorporate Newton's third law of action reaction to explain to specialists, like, and make sense of their body and its movements. And as mentioned earlier, with your engineering major, like, could you share how it's helped your snapping and how you're using the understanding of physics to aid in your mechanics?
Yeah, most of what I use the physics for is the efficiency and explosion into the ball and then shooting the ball out at max velocity, basically. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to, you use Newton's third law. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. If I want the ball to travel on a singular line, spinning in a tight spiral, I think I introduced you to the term the resultant force of your two hands. So whatever force you put in with your right hand and whatever force you put in with your left hand, all three axes of motion, all three axes of force must be pressed into the ball and canceling each other, except for that one velocity going on your line and then a rotational force that leads you to the spiral. So, I mean, I studied hand placement a lot, you know, what I need to do, how I can, you know, I see a lot of guys with right hand, like you throw the ball like you're supposed to, and their left hand all the way at the bottom of the ball, like close to the ground. It's not how you do it. Like that's probably the worst way you can throw a spiral, because your left hand has to literally fight your right hand to keep the spiral on. If you draw a line between your two hands that's in the middle of all your points of contact on the ball, it should be exactly on the axis of the ball. If you're off, your spiral is going to be off, and then you have to compensate another way to get that spiral down. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff, and it's a lot of stuff that I'm sure some of, like, it's hard to explain on a podcast.
Absolutely. If you don't mind me adding on to that, like I want to add on to that and say that from my side of things, and why we were on here for 3 hours there a night. I mean, and I have pictures of the things you drew in your napkin about how to find that 21 degree angle and using a 43 to a 35 inch rotating hurdle. You and I can go nuts, and it's because we're so in love with it and we've dug deep and we've failed, right? That's because I think we have to fail through these thoughts to find what's true. But what I wanted to say is the deviations from normal, right? Excessive movements, aggressive movements, things that we believe to be true that aren't, is bigger is best. Or, you know, if we want to be repeatable, we have to minimize the variables. And it's what you just said. I mean, again, we can really explain it, but it's hard and it's more a visual thing. But essentially what we're trying to do is we're trying to identify anything that's excessive, anything that's going to add more variables, and we're trying to streamline this process. We're trying to eliminate anything that's irrelevant or not complementary to our goal. And I think in doing that and finding out what it is and streamlining a process It is the hard work. That's the hard part. The easy part is to, once you've found your process and once it is streamlined, how do I maintain? How is it sustainable? How do I keep this process repeatable through a 16-week season or whatever level you're playing at? So I want to go further with it. Like, cause you and I find very few people who think of it and compartmentalize the process the way you do. And I think for your age, it's just incredible. And I think that if you continue along this path, you're destined for greatness. I mean, you're going to be able to be a mechanical engineer one day, but I think that Sundays, NFL, people like that, they value smart, and you're a very intelligent guy and you know how to self-critique. So I wanted to get into that. Specialists at all levels are evaluated. You know, you can go to a Jamie Cole you referenced. You can go to I'll be down at IMG this weekend doing a camp, and I'm going to evaluate specialists. And the data is often collected through charting, you know, field goal charts, snap charts, punt charts, kickoff charts. And I use the charts a little differently. Obviously, I'm going to separate who's the best from the worst. But in addition to that, and where I think that you took it to another level, is you use the charting to show deficiencies. Right? Where am I vulnerable? Where are my tendencies? And then what am I going to do about it? So in 19 years doing this, as I mentioned, I've been doing this for 19 years with specialists, and I've seen a lot of good specialist coaches, and I've seen a lot of good ways they evaluate. But when I saw your snap chart, it impressed me because it was several things that I think have to be true. It's objective, it's specific, it's measurable, and most importantly for us football coaches, it is in fact user-friendly. So could you elaborate on your charting system and how you kind of use that to better your process?
Absolutely. When I got the idea to start charting my own snaps, you know, I was like, this had to be an idea that people have done before. Let me ask around everybody I know in the specialist community, see if they have a snapping chart that they use. What I found was very basic, didn't cover all the variables that can go wrong in a snap, you know? So I was like, wow, okay, I'll just make my own. So I did. I opened up Microsoft Publisher, found some stock images, put them in there, and then started thinking of variables that make a snap go wrong and ways that could be represented on paper. So I did there. When I chart my snaps, I have on a single page of paper split into two different charts, one on the left side, one on the right. I have a punt, just an outline silhouette of what I call the punter. I drew a little line for his waistband. I put his numbers on there, and that's my punter. And below is a holder and like a clock. And so there's all these annotations that I put in to every single snap that I film and chart, you know, the color of the ink, the shape of the little marker. I number every dot that goes down so I can tell, you know, if I snapped a ball high, you know, and that's number 11, and then number 12 is really low, well, I know, okay, I overcompensated aiming low. Same vice versa. If 11's low and 12's high, I overcompensated high. I missed left and the next one's right. So I'm pretty much good enough to not do that, not overcompensate. But it's all, you can see from an unbiased standpoint what you're doing, even subconsciously.
Yeah.
You can tell, you know, I had... Coach, I don't know if you've even seen yet. I had my best day snapping ever yesterday.
I saw it the July 12th with the Townsends, I think.
Yes, it was phenomenal. I was sitting there. I couldn't even believe my own production yesterday. It was first day back in pads and, you know, I was just wearing pads and helmet. And I was like, wow, I really impressed myself. But, you know, it's back to the charting. it's... You know, everything I do, it honestly takes me longer to chart the snaps than it takes me to snap them. If I'm out, sure. I'm out snapping for an hour, it'll take me an hour 15 to chart everything. Go through every rep, slow motion, find the little things, take notes on the side, annotate all the, you know, blocking right, punting right, you know, oh, I stepped with my right foot first. I need to step with my left foot first, whatever.
Yeah, because it's not a visual show, I want to describe briefly two of the my favorite pieces or components of your chart. And in terms of like the body silhouette, imagine someone that's listening to the show, imagine going to a gun range and, you know, 20 feet away is that body silhouette where the bullets are hitting the body. You can see if you got a headshot or if it missed the body or if it got the left torso. Essentially, what Alex does is he numbers the snaps. So if he say he has 10 balls, snap one went right hip. He puts that little tiny one exactly at the location, whether it's the hip flexor or above the hip flexor, exactly where the location or the result went or occurred. And if there's an outlier, he's got space in the paper, say three was outside the body. He might make a little three or four word phrase of saying, I think I was lagging with my left foot, or I think that I had an overly aggressive left hand. That's why it resulted right, whatever the case may be. And what I want to touch on as well, before I go on to the last point, is you said something that I think is true. And I think the reason why people don't necessarily ever get a chance to be successful in whatever it is they claim to be passionate about is when you talk to a contractor, when you talk to a painter, when you talk to anybody, not football, but anybody that has a process about what they're going to do in terms of a long-term project, more often than not, everyone says the preparation is the longest part. Right. The activity itself, and in this case today, it's snapping. The activity is the easy part. And people call that the work. But I think that you could probably agree with me. The work actually is before and after. You know,
work is everything off the field.
Absolutely.
The fun part is on the field.
Amen. And I think people fail to realize that. If you love football, that's the fun part. But it's what we do off the field to make sure the next experience is better. And I think we need to do a better job, everyone, in reflecting on ourselves. Instead of just, you know, being okay with working hard that day on the field, that's not going to get it done. That's not how anyone is great. And the last thing is the ball rotation thing fascinates me. You know, we call it quarter turns. And if you want to get real technical, eighth of a turn could be brought into play too. But we as holders or specialists, we really like for our snappers to give us laces in an optimal place for our hand to put the ball down so the kicker can kick a field goal.
Yeah. So you want to, it's for people that aren't specialists. I don't know how many that are not, doesn't know what you want the punt snap or the field goal snap to come in rotated correctly with laces pointing directly up when the holder catches.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you were leading into this. I have a silhouette also of a holder on my chart at the bottom. And then the clock, it really looks more like crosshairs, is positioned off to the right. And wherever the laces come in for a field goal snap, I make a little tick mark on that clock, you know, 1 o'clock or I don't like it, but 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. You know, those are the bad ones. You start getting the 11, 12s, ones, you know, you're in the right spot. And then you can even, since I number everything, the silhouette of the holder, I mark where the ball gets to them. And then I mark the tick mark on the clock. And then I number both of those with the same number. So snap four came in, hit them exactly where I want it, laces up, perfect snap. But then you'll get balls, and I found a relation between you'll get high balls. Like if it's snapped up to the holder's like forehead, those tick marks will always be moving 2-3 o'clock. It rotates more, just that little bit longer is traveled in the higher snap.
Yeah. That distance point is you, right. And that's another way I like your chart is sometimes especially if someone is very consistently in the same, placement location. Sometimes it's like, well, instead of going from 7, why don't you try 7 and a foot? See if we can manipulate that distance point. But again, that's in a vacuum. That's assuming you're throwing a straight line and it's very consistent. I think what I have a hard time with is when people want to jump over the process, like what you're doing, and just start moving. I'm going to go 8 yards. Well, you don't even snap consistently at 7. So how do we know 7 is not your mark? Again, it's if you want to be great, you must put the time in. Absolutely must put the time in. And I want to end on this point with this. people are probably now freaking out saying, oh, I don't do this. And it's okay, because most people listening to the show are coaches and high school guys. There's not a lot of college long snappers listening right now. So the good news is this.
And nobody else does this.
Well, sure. Well, that's what I wanted to say too, is like, I go to some big universities. I'm not going to name names, but I've been to some crazy situations where I've seen the activities of specialists outside of team periods, right? If we have 20 period practice, I don't care what you have. Someone's like, oh, I have 18. Who cares? Not the point. In 20 periods, usually we're involved with two. Okay. Hopefully. I mean, I've seen a little bit more, but hopefully at least two. And the other 18, I've seen the crazy, I'm not going to name names, but a major FBS program in our state had set up made a fort of like body pads.
I know exactly what you're talking
about.
Right.
And I've seen, and then I saw
watching March Madness.
Sure. And then I saw an FCS team in my area, closer to us in Central Florida, that was playing essentially American Gladiator game, right? With like broomsticks and D-line pull sticks and like, and to me, that is absurd. Instead, I mean, you're there hopefully to play, to be a contributor at a high level. You should be doing what you're doing. And I don't care if it's exactly what you're doing, but you should be compartmentalizing your process. You know, one day it should be focused on release. One day it should be on footwork. One day it should be my first 5 or 10 off the ball. There's so many things that we could refine our system or process with. But I think that sometimes we don't have a lot of direction. And that's the purpose of the show, is I want to bring guys like you who are forward thinking, that are taking full advantage of their time, because we do have a lot of it. And that's dangerous sometimes when we have a lot of time, because if you're a complacent person and if you're not self-motivated, you're going to get distracted and you're not going to work on your process, right?
Absolutely.
So I want to ask you one more thing, a little bit lighter, but I think it's important to talk about this, and I really want your honest answer here. Many high school kids that are listening, and the parents, they have these aspirations of playing at the FBS level. That's where you play. And I don't, get me wrong, I mean, that should be a dream, but there's nothing wrong with FCS and D2. But let's just assume that college is the goal. And we've already talked about this a little bit, but many don't realize that there's work that's required to be successful, especially as a student athlete at the college level. Could you explain the demands of balancing this football requirement at UCF with the mechanical engineering classes? Oh, and by the way, you have an internship on top of that. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. It's definitely not just playing football. It's not a walk in the park either. Football at the college level, especially FBS, is a huge demand on your time already. In the season, we'll have our first meeting at 7:15 a.m. and we won't be off the practice field until 11:30 a.m. And then you have breakfast before that and lunch after. So, you know, I'm normally up at 5:45. I'm up at 5:45 every morning. I'm eating breakfast by 6:15, going in, stretching a little bit, getting some, you know, getting to meetings early, getting dressed, stuff like that. 7:15, you know, we have meetings, and then some days a workout and then practice, and we're off the field at 11:30, and you know, you can eat lunch by 12:15. So that's football one for the day. And then you come back for afternoon meetings, and our meetings are, well, we have a new staff, but last year they ran 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. So you come in for an hour, sit down, watch all your film from the day. You know, coach has already watched it, been through it. He critiques you and everything. You know, specialist kickers, especially, because a lot of college coaches know kickers. But, I mean, everybody has those meetings. D-line, O-line, quarterbacks even go longer. So that's football too. So you're looking at, you know, 4 or 5 hours in the morning and then an hour in the afternoon, plus mandatory lunch, breakfast, and dinner, or breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so you add, in my case, mechanical engineering classes onto that. You have, you know, probably 4 hours of class a day, and you try to throw an internship at, I was at Lockheed Martin, but other internships as well. Lockheed was very kind on my schedule. it becomes your entire day. It's planned from 5:45 a.m. till 7:30 p.m. at least of planned stuff, and then you have homework after that. So during 2019, when my first year starting, and it was obviously, well, junior year of mechanical engineering classes, so that's pretty rough. And then I had just started my internship that July. I went practice in the morning, was fortunate enough to not have classes between 12 and 4:30. So I would shower and eat as fast as I could, drive to my internship, get 3 hours in there, drive back to be at 4:30 meetings. And then after that, I had a 6 o'clock class on Tuesday, Thursday. And after that was homework. So, you know, I was going all day, every day for, you know, the full semester. And yeah, it was a fun time. Very, very hectic.
If you could guess, because this will be your final year. Collectively, you've been there for five. If you had to guess in season, if there's a 24-hour day, which every day is, how much time did you have to sleep / have independent time that wasn't accounted for via class, weight room, study hall, film, on field? How much independent time did you have?
I've actually done that math before. Here, I pulled out my little sticky note I did it on. So this is the breakdown of a week. And it's important to not is this time breakdown is not including mandatory meals, three a day, any game day activities, so anything on Saturday, and any homework time spent. So we practiced from 6:30 to 11:30, 5 days a week. That would be 25 hours. I worked 12 hours a week at Lockheed, which is 12 hours. Afternoon meetings were an hour a day for 4 days. That's 4 hours. And then, hold on, this is kind of hard to read. I had 12 and a half hours a week of lectures. The game is 4 hours. And Sunday we had hour-long meetings just to evaluate your game. And Friday meetings in the hotel were 2.5 hours. So adding that all up, that is 61 hours a week.
And I don't think the kids that are listening that are not in college yet, for every 1 hour that you're in an engineering class, for example, how many hours of homework outside of that class?
It depends on how proficient you are. And depends on the professor. Like, I have a professor right now that doesn't even require homework. It's just practice problems if you want to do them. And I've had professors that give you, you know, 20 practice problems every section. Like, every chapter 3.2 has 20 practice problems. Chapter 3.3 has 20 practice problems. So,
yeah, I think in short, what we're trying to say is that it's daunting, especially if you're not prepared for it and your expectations aren't there. Fully expect that it's not just glitz and glamour. You don't just get to wear that pretty jersey and have a cool Instagram account with all your friends in the same jersey and a nice locker and a cool weight room and all these things. These things are earned, and they most assuredly make you earn it. I don't care who you are. I mean, it is a commitment with time. And honestly, there's sacrifices that have to be made. And I think a lot of it is your social life. Mm-hmm. If that's the number one thing in your life in high school and football second, you are going to have a hard time and you're probably not going to make it.
One of the biggest things my dad told me was there at any given point, there's 10,000 people that would change spots with you in a second. And there's 1,000 people that can replace you in a second. So you got to stay above those 1,000. And be appreciative that you're, you know, where you are. And so that's what I've always kept me rolling. You know, if I'm dying in a workout, well, there's 10,000 people that would love to be in this workout right now. So let's keep going.
You have a good mindset, man. And I think you have to. And I'm just appreciative. You know, I want to thank you for doing this today. Again, I don't need to mention how busy your schedule is, but you did take an hour of your day to share with us your story and just how you attack the day on a daily basis. If you wouldn't mind sharing with the audience how they could reach you via social media if they have a follow-up question on today's show.
Absolutely. I'm here to help anybody that asks. I was actually texting a guy on Instagram earlier. My Instagram is Alex_Ward_32. I'm not very active on Twitter, but I could maybe read it in like 2-3 weeks after you send it to me. But Instagram, I'm guaranteed to answer immediately.
Smart man. I don't think if I was on an active team, I think I'd stay the hell off Twitter too. There's just too many trolls. But yeah. No, on behalf of everyone at Fourth Down Focus, we just want to thank Alex Ward again for sharing all this vital information, especially if you're a coach or a long snapper in particular. And we hope it will help you benefit in your performance both on and off the field. Please give us a 5-star rating, a review, subscribe to the show, and share it with a friend. If you have questions related to the podcast, suggestions for future topics or guests, or if you just have feedback, you can reach me, Dan Lundy, in several ways. My website is fourthdownu, that's 4thdownu.com. It has endless resources for both specialists and coaches. On Instagram and Twitter, I am @fourthdownu. And on Facebook and LinkedIn, you can find me by simply searching Dan space Lundy, LUNDY. Thank you again for joining us at Fourth Down Focus, presented by Bets Online. We'll see you next week with an exciting new guest, another long snapper, by the way, Alex Ward. We're having Jake Tillman, former LS for the Florida Gators. I hope 21 is treating each of you well. And remember, in all things, give thanks.